of years, gaining particular attention in the media because of a number of suicides that resulted from specific instances of adolescent bullying resulting from homophobia. Dr. Elizabeth Sawick is the public health chair of the Canadian Institute of Health Research and is conducting a new 5-year study evaluating the impact of anti-gay bullying in several Canadian provinces and American states and the effectiveness of initiatives to combat the bullying. Dr. Sawick, thank you so much for joining us.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon to be here.
So first off, could you just talk a little bit about the study and perhaps explain its scope and its intended purpose?
Sure. So what the study is really sort of looking at, within Canada and in the United States, the health of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and questioning teens in terms of their mental health, their sexual health, their substance use well-being, but especially how bullying in school actually connects to or links to, influences that kind of behavior and those health outcomes. Part of what we know from previous research is that bullying has some really bad effects on young people's health, regardless of why you're bullied. Mm-hmm. And so we also know that lesbian, gay, bisexual teens or straight teens that people think are gay actually experience more bullying than other kinds of youth in school. So as a result, we see some huge disparities in terms of their health outcomes, greater risk of suicide, which we've all seen on the news lately. Mm-hmm. And so part of what we're wanting to do is understand how can schools create safer space and more inclusive space for young people in high school. We understand that there's lots of different strategies that different schools have used, whether that's gay-straight alliances in some schools or Dream Montreal actually is doing interventions where they have gay and lesbian people come into the classroom and just answer whatever questions young people have. So there's lots of different strategies to help make a difference, but very few of them have actually been evaluated rigorously. So what this study will do is bring together researchers from across Canada and from the United States to work together on different projects to evaluate the effectiveness of different strategies, because one size does not fit all, and different interventions may work better in different places.
Mm-hmm. Another question I had for you actually is, where exactly is the study being conducted, and is there a reason that you chose those particular areas to investigate over others?
Right. So at present, we have both, we're going to be doing a national survey of school districts across every single province and hopefully into the territories to talk to superintendents about what their strategies are in their school districts. In addition to that, we're using existing school-based adolescent health survey data from BC, from Nova Scotia, from Minnesota, and from Massachusetts. So the information is sort of limited by where there already exist these adolescent health surveys to ask about sexual orientation. So in addition to sex, drugs, rock and roll, exercise, and nutrition, do they ask about people's sexual identity? That allows us to actually do some of those like long-term trends. There's also a national homophobia study that was conducted out of the University of Winnipeg that we will be doing some further analyses with, and a francophone version that was conducted out of Quebec. And so our partners include folks from universities in Winnipeg, as well as Quebec, Nova Scotia, Dalhousie, as well as UBC, and then Boston, Harvard University, and then folks from Minnesota. We also have a number of sort of intensive case studies of school districts that will take place in provinces that don't have surveys about adolescents that include sexual orientation. So, for example, the Institute for Sexual Minorities Studies out of the University of Edmonton in, University of Alberta in Edmonton will be a partner, as well as Wilfrid Laurier University in Waterloo, Ontario. And so these are two school districts that have specific case studies going on. We'll also be partnering with folks in Abitibi-Témiscaming in Quebec for a intensive case study of the programs that are going on in their community, and possibly one of the school districts in Winnipeg. At the moment, Saskatchewan is one of the sort of provinces that's not participating, primarily because we don't have colleagues at a university who focus on youth in looking at that research. But it's a five-year study, and we're hoping to actually increase some of that collaboration over time. So part of our goal is actually to create this network of researchers who are all doing this kind of research. And instead of having somebody from University of Quebec or Montreal doing something, and then I find out about it in Vancouver, you know, 3 years later when it gets published and go, oh, cool idea, we should do that too, write a grant, get accepted, do the research, and it's now been, what, 8 years? Mm-hmm. This way, we're doing the research at the same time and sharing those ideas with each other so that progress happens faster and the research results apply to more provinces and more contexts sooner.
So it's kind of a collaborative effort across universities, across North America, really.
Exactly.
Something else I was wondering about is, I guess, as of right now, the study, I don't think you said the study includes any Native communities, but I was wondering maybe, do you have any plans to include them? And if so, do you think that the problem would be different in any fundamental way in a Native context?
Well, we actually, for the province-wide adolescent health surveys, in BC as well as in the U.S., there are Native communities and Native schools that are part of those surveys, and mm-hmm. Aboriginal, First Nations, American Indian youth who are part of those schools and contribute. In the past, I've been involved in doing research around the health of Indigenous youth in the U.S., Canada, and even New Zealand, and looking at sexual minority youth health issues in Aboriginal communities, and we see many of the same issues as in the general population, in part because of colonization and mm-hmm. Some of the changes in terms of what used to be really positive roles for Two-Spirit people that because of colonization and some of the legacies of that, homophobia is on reserves as well. So we're finding, you know, we've previously found that Aboriginal youth who identify as gay, lesbian, bisexual, or Two-Spirit are more likely to experience that same kind of homophobic bullying as their LGBT peers in other cultural groups, and it has some of the same effects. So, you know, while we're not specifically at this point planning on doing evaluation of perhaps reserve-based schools, we are going to be including Aboriginal young people in most of the specific sub-studies that are going on and engaging, you know, our Aboriginal researchers as part of the team to actually understand how does it look the same and how does it look different. Some of what is suggested, although this is still very, very preliminary, is that in First Nations communities, what may need to be really helpful is actually doing some work around reconnecting to historical traditions and historical knowledge about Two-Spirit people as a way of helping to address some of the homophobia that exists in schools in those communities.
Okay. And you've mentioned that the kind of underlying homophobia of our society is kind of seen as the main root of the intensity of the homophobic bullying. Do you think it's possible to deal with the bullying without dealing with that underlying homophobia, which extends far beyond the classroom and far beyond the school? And is the study also looking into ways of dealing with not just the bullying, but homophobia itself?
That is a very good question. You know, changing culture is always tough. You know, we do see that some of this work does, you know, have its impact beyond. I mean, some interventions are not actually in the schools, but in the communities, and are working to help change attitudes in schools. I do think that until we see overarching, you know, broad society cultural change, our schools are not going to be completely free of homophobia. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that does give me hope is that we're not just focusing on ending bullying. An important part of what helps young people grow and become healthier adults is actually their level of connectedness to school. And that means the extent to which they feel like they're a part of their school, the extent to which teachers and other school people actually care about them and treat them fairly. And so what we find is that even when kids are being bullied or experiencing homophobic bullying from other students, if they actually have caring, connected teachers and feel like they're a part of the school, that high school connectedness, it kind of offsets. It helps sort of buffer some of the negative consequences of that bullying. So, mm-hmm. So part of what we're also interested in is understanding what are the interventions that actually foster school connectedness and help create schools as an inclusive place for everybody. And that's an important part of the research that we're doing as well.
Okay, so kind of in the interim, before we get rid of homophobia, ways to make the experience of children who are being victimized a little bit better.
Absolutely.
So there have been initiatives to try to negate the effects of homophobic bullying, including, famously, Dan Savage's It Gets Better campaigns, which, for those who may not know, he posted a video talking about his experience being bullied as a gay teenager and how much his life has improved since then, and he encouraged other people to post videos in the same vein, which many, many did. Do you think that campaigns like Dan Savage's have been effective?
Oh, well, I guess it really depends on effective at what. It's great that lesbian, gay, bisexual people, adults, are actually, you know, creating these messages to give kids hope. But I have to tell you that most of the young people I've talked to want it better now. They don't want to wait until they're 35 or 40 for it to get better. And when they're dealing with an, you know, incredibly toxic environment and they don't see themselves surviving beyond the end of the month, waiting beyond the end of high school is just impossible. So there's actually a movement of young people around North America that are actually sort of piggybacking on this whole It Gets Better campaign from Dan Savage, and instead saying, make it better now. And they're doing videos and creating strategies to change things right now for young people in school. I think that those video campaigns by adults like Dan Savage and such they have a little bit of effect in that they raise awareness of the general population about what's happening and let people know that this is not okay and that we have to do something about it and that, you know, there is some hope for the future for some people, but I do think that it's not enough of an impact. It doesn't have a big effect, especially for those young people who are currently struggling in school. And, you know, it's a matter of life and death.
Mm-hmm. On that note, homophobic bullying in particular has garnered a lot of attention, possibly because there were several high-profile cases that were all over the news of teens committing suicide as a result of that kind of bullying. And I was wondering if you thought that there was something that sets anti-gay bullying apart from other kinds of bullying, perhaps making it more vicious or merciless. And I was also wondering, what exactly qualifies bullying as being homophobic?
Okay, so let's do the definitions first. Mm-hmm. And homophobic bullying would be bullying, so that's exclusion or harassment, insults, violence, actual assault, that has as a component of it a negative comment or a denigrating comment about being gay, lesbian, bisexual, queer. So, you know, that's so gay, targeted in school, that comment, or calling someone a fag. But also, I mean, in the same way that you can look at racial bullying and you know it when you see it, a big part of homophobic bullying is making fun of people because maybe the way they portray themselves in terms of being masculine or feminine is different. They're not hitting the stereotypes of what we expect societally of what it means to be a boy or a girl. But also, the accusation that they're gay or they're lesbian or that message that says, being gay is not okay. So why does it... I'm not sure that it necessarily is more severe. I mean, like there's something different about it that makes it worse. I think racial bullying is just as bad, and bullying because of physical ability or because of your gender can be quite distressing as well. I think the difference is that in our society, it's no longer okay to bully someone because of their ethnicity or their religion or their physical abilities or and sexual harassment is actually illegal. Like, you can go to jail for that. So I think, you know, part of it is that in schools, in many places, this is still one of the last acceptable forms of harassment and insult. And so as a result, that's a piece of it. The other part is that oftentimes homophobic bullying is a thinly disguised form of sexism or sexual harassment. And it has to do with sort of policing gender performance and what it means to be a boy or a girl. And that kind of harassment is still perhaps a little more acceptable. Part of it is that we don't have, in many places, we don't actually have policies or rules that say teachers have to intervene and say this is not okay. And so they hear it and they don't do anything about it. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes they even contribute to it. And so when schools are telling young people, even straight young people who other people are harassing because they think they're gay, that you should just not act that way or, you know, try to keep a low profile or, you know, just suck it up, then mm-hmm. then it's not, it sends the message that you are not equally valued and you are not a citizen and that you don't have the same rights as other students in school. Mm-hmm. So it's a fairness issue, that it's really unfair that some kids can be singled out to be targeted and not feel safe. And yet our Charter of Rights and the UN Convention of the Rights of the Child says everyone deserves an education. Everyone deserves to live a life free from violence. Mm-hmm. So to the extent that schools are not living up to that obligation, that's a problem.
Okay, well, we'll have to stop it there. But Dr. Sawick, thank you so much. That was a really interesting look at the homophobic bullying, and I'll be interested to see the result of the research in 5 years.
We'll try to get the research results out as they're happening so that we don't have to wait 5 years to get some of those answers.
Well, that would
but
be great.
Thanks for having me.
No problem. Have a good day.